Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Now we turn to another memoir, this one by James Cabasis with Joan Jacobson. The book is called Eyes of Justice, A Career Crime Fighter Battles Corruption and Blindness. It chronicles Cabasis' career in law enforcement, first as a Baltimore City police officer, and then for 38 years as an investigator and chief investigator for the Office of the State Prosecutor. And as he worked as an investigator, he was dealing with a debilitating eye disease called Stevens-Johnson syndrome, which led over a period of 40 years to Jim Cabasis losing his sight. Welcome to you both, Jim Cabasis.
Thank you very much.
It's good to see you, and Joan, good to see you. This book is an amazing, amazing account of some incredible historic incidents in the history of Maryland. As a private citizen, you filed a request with the Office of the State Prosecutor to look into Catherine Pugh's behavior in office, and you were the person who initiated the investigation into former Mayor Sheila Dixon.
That's correct.
Tell me what you think the parallels between those two cases and these two mayors might be.
Yeah. With respect to two of these ladies, or both of these ladies, they had wonderful reputations because of what they could positively achieve and bring to Baltimore City. For instance, Catherine Pugh brought the marathon, and while Sheila Dixon, while she was on the council, there were many, many projects that were started and completed because she wanted to have those projects done so that we could have a better quality of life in Baltimore City. Unfortunately, they both had an aberration, I'll call it, and I think the common denominator there is greed and hubris.
And when it comes to Sheila Dixon, when you initiated that investigation, given that experience, what kinds of investigative techniques, what kinds of questions were the state prosecutors and others asking about Catherine Pugh? Because obviously, you know, we concentrated a lot on the raids that happened at the seven locations, including her homes and City Hall for former Mayor Pugh. But what talk us through what you assume happened in that Office of Special Prosecutor prior to that.
If I just look back at my experiences, I would know that they would want to collect as many pieces of tangible evidence as possible. So they would have issued bank accounts for all of the bank accounts that Pugh had. They, of course, would want to get copies of the perjurious financial disclosure statement that she filed. And if possible, you know, even though in today's world, doing what I call a trash rip, the Supreme Court has said that once a person puts trash out on a public street, it's considered to be abandoned property. Therefore, anyone can take it. And oftentimes, there's a lot of evidence in that trash.
Yeah, and you write about how you went through more than a carton or two of trash in your career. And Joan Jacobson, this really, in addition to Jim's amazing story and how he dealt with this debilitating eye condition, this becomes a history of corruption in the city of Baltimore, in the state of Maryland, over a 40-year period. It's incredible.
We believe it's the first history of Maryland political corruption in almost 50 years, since the days of Spiro Agnew and Marvin Mandel and others. Yeah.
And it shows, and of course you're a former newspaper woman with the Baltimore Sun for many years, it really shows in so many instances the importance of the press and the investigations that the press begins that oftentimes the Office of Special Prosecutor continues.
Right, absolutely. Jim got the idea to investigate Sheila Dixon by reading articles in The Sun by Doug Donovan, who is still with The Sun and is writing about Catherine Pugh now. And Jim instigated other investigations over the years after reading about them in The Sun. The first Nat Oakes case was a Baltimore Evening Sun story.
Yeah,
by
Nathaniel Oakes, a senator
who's
now serving time in prison.
Right. So, the media does play
One thing I would say, sir, the only thing that's really surprised me is that the expected deterrence does not occur because even though, so you do this very notorious case, you would think the next person would say, oh, I'm not going to do that. I just happened to learn what happened to this particular elected official. In the school case, that's Baltimore City, we had learned about a bribery that was taking place so to protect a theft scheme. We recovered $3.5 million and was able to give that back to the school. But then there's a chapter in a book. It's called Principals Without Principals. All these principals that were stealing money.
These are school, city school system principals.
Shameful behavior.
And when it came to things like when you encountered the stories about the Gun Trace Task Force, you served as a street cop for many years before you joined the Office of Special Prosecutor. It didn't surprise you, I'm told, that the GCTF, the people involved in that case were doing what they were doing. What is, when you talk about deterrence for public officials or deterrence for police officers, what is your suggestion as to what needs to be done to prevent this kind of thing from happening in the future?
And I think Bishop Robinson, for whom the headquarters building is named,
he's a former police chief in Baltimore City and former director of the Maryland State Police, right?
Yes. Yeah, Bishop L. Robinson. His mantra was, if you don't inspect, don't expect. And so you ask yourself the question, how could a gun gang task force had the ability that they were doing this for about 8 years. I mean, no one's checking. No one's checking. And that's what I think they need to go back to. Quite frankly, the little bit I know about the new commissioner, Harrison, I have great expectations that he is going to improve the quality of policing. And that means that police officers have to treat the citizens with utmost respect.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps Joan Jacobson, supervisors in the police department mm-hmm. need to be a little closer to the ground. They need
right.
to be on the street.
And when Jim says you have to inspect, he means that the supervisors, with the sergeants and the lieutenants, Jim, need to be out there on the street making sure their officers are really working overtime, are conducting legal searches, are not stealing drugs or anything else from suspects.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a matter of just, you know, not taking people's word for it when it comes to filling out forms and stuff. In terms of the kinds of initiatives that the Baltimore City Council is now looking at to change ethics requirements and even change the city charter so that they could remove a mayor from office, because it seemed like, when this happened to Mayor Dixon, who went to trial and that pled to a misdemeanor charge and did community service and agreed to leave office, that here goes, 10 years later, it happens again.
Yes.
Are there things that the city council should be thinking about to on the elected official level help prevent it in the future?
Yeah, I think Brandon Scott has the right idea when he is saying that we need to change the city charter, that if we find that the mayor, for that matter, people who have been elected to the city council have committed a crime, especially if it violates the public trust, they can be thrown out of office.
And Joan Jacobson, you chronicle Jim Cabezas's involvement in a number of things involving the state, people around the state, Anne Arundel County Executive John Leopold, a delegate from Prince George's County, Tiffany Alston, the famous robocall case.
Yes.
I mean, people make jokes about, the crooked Chicago politics or crooked Maryland politics. It seems like we live up to that reputation pretty strongly, don't we?
Unfortunately, yeah. It just keeps going. I mean, I became a reporter in the days of Agnew and Mandel and Dale Anderson and Joe Walton, and there were so many officials being indicted that when I was a young reporter, I covered Howard County, and I felt left out because the Howard County executive was the only honest guy around. I didn't get to cover a scandal. I guess it would be worse if there was no state prosecutor's office or no U.S. attorney's office to investigate this. But it is rampant.
And Jim Cabezas is the office of the state prosecutor. Do you think funded amply enough? Is it, you know, are there people in there now who are working at the same kind of level, clearly an effective level that you had when you were there? Because, boy, you found an awful lot of corruption.
Yeah, I think in the first term of Gerald D. Glass, there was a lot of concern whether we would be defunded. They would just never do away with the legislation that created the office, but we worried about being defunded. We were sort of like the bastard child. You know, you got to give them something, but not too much.
Yeah.
I recall being at a judiciary meeting, and Steve Montanaroli was asking that.
It was in the prosecutor's office.
He was the state prosecutor later.
Mm-hmm. Yes, after Jerry Glass. He was asking that they allow us to have subpoena power. One of the members stood up, and I'll say it because he said it publicly. Lou DePaso, who was a delegate from the Dundalk area, stood up and said, if you think I'm going to give you guys money or more power to investigate me and my friends, you're crazy.
Yeah. Clearly, the political opposition to this is sort of, you know, understandable, one would think. Just as we finish up here, Jim, the eye condition, the eyesight condition that you've suffered from more than 40, 50 years now, Stevens-Johnson syndrome,
mm-hmm.
You wanted to stay working as an investigator. You were not able to drive a car or carry a gun at the time of the Sheila Dixon investigation, but you still were able to lead that investigation. This comes out to me, this strikes me as one of the most incredible parts of this book, your dedication to this job, even given your physical disability.
Well, my father instilled that in me. He was born in a third world country of Nicaragua and fortunately was ever able to get a work visa and became a United States citizen. For him and my mother, that was the proudest moment other than the birth of my sister and I. So he frequently gave us civic lessons. And what he explained to us, look, when something needs to be done in order to protect the balance of power, you do it either as a citizen or whatever your profession may be. So with respect to, let's just say, Catherine Pugh, I really felt duty-bound because of what my father had instilled in me, that it had to be reported to the Office of the State Prosecutor.
Yeah, so you wrote a letter as a private citizen asking
yes.
for an investigation.
Yeah.
James Cabezas, he was the chief investigator for the Office of the State Prosecutor here in Maryland. Before that, he was a Baltimore City police officer. His new memoir is called Eyes of Justice, A Career Crime Fighter Battles Corruption and Blindness. Joan Jacobson is co-author of this amazing book. She was a reporter for the Baltimore Sun and the Evening Sun for 28 years. They'll be talking about the book tonight at 6:30 at the Maryland State Library for the Blind in Baltimore. It's on Park Avenue, directly behind the Enoch Pratt Central Library. And we've got more information on our website, wypr.org/midday. James Cabezas, Joan Jacobson, thank you so much. Appreciate
it. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, Baltimore City Solicitor Andre Davis will join me for the hour. We'll take your calls and questions about the latest from City Hall, and Lord knows there has been a lot with the city's top lawyer. That's coming up tomorrow on Midday. We want to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared has been recently recognized by the Daily Meal. Menu and hours can be found at joesquared.com. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.